That was Free Speech Radio News. Coming up next is the Urbana-Champaign Independent Media Center Radio News. Today's feature subject is about the sanctions and the war still going on in Iraq, unbeknownst to most people. But first, news headlines. A recent General Accounting Office report has concluded that removing federal meat inspectors from production lines allows unsafe meat products to reach consumers. Hazard Analysis Critical Control Point, or HACCP, has placed oversight and safety into the hands of meatpacking plants at the cost of product safety, the report revealed. The program is essentially privatized an important government regulation function. The dangers of this new type of inspection were highlighted in a 1997 book simply titled Slaughterhouse by investigative reporter Gail Eisnitz. Consumer groups like Public Citizen have long criticized this move towards self-regulation, predicting that increased cases of food poisoning and other ailments would occur. For instance, on standards ranging from contamination with fecal matter to feathers and glands left on carcasses, several chicken processing plants in this pilot project did not perform as well as they did under traditional inspection. The program essentially privatized an important government regulation function. Quote, these plans look like drive-through car washes. The cars enter with fecal matter inside and out, and it leaves all pretty and shiny on the outside. But what about the inside? No one is looking at the inside, unquote, said Delmer Jones, president of the National Joint Council for Food Inspection Locals, the Union for Federal Meat Inspectors. Quote, instead of addressing the problem, the USDA would rather spend millions of taxpayers' dollars telling consumers how great the outside of the car looks. Audrey Hatter, this program is just another attempt to delegate a powerful industry, just as was with the electric. This program is just another attempt to deregulate a powerful industry, just as which the deregulation of the electric industry. It's the consumer who loses. Most consumers would be appalled to find out that the USDA has even considered reducing meat inspection system to an industry honor system, unquote. Public citizens recommend that line speed at slaughter plants be slowed down to allow more thorough inspection, that plant inspectors be authorized to remove contaminated carcasses from production line, and added legal protections for whistleblowers. The U.S. implicated in a raid gone awry. According to the Associated Press, the U.S. is tackling criticism from targeting civilians in Thursday night's raid in Afghanistan. Yusuf Pashtun, a provincial official, told the Associated Press that he had spoken to officials from whom complained about being targeted and said police buildings were hit in the raid. It looks like the raid was a mistake, Pashtun said. The people of the district center are very much against the Taliban. U.S. Special Forces swooped in around 3 a.m. Thursday morning and shot and killed many people staying overnight in an Islamic school, or madras, they called in an airstrike. Two of the dead were later found with their hands tied behind their backs, he said. What were the civilians doing at madras? Resident said a local official, John Mohammed Khan, sent a party of 18 men commanded by local resident Haji Sana Gul to negotiate with Taliban forces on Wednesday. The subject of the negotiation was an apparently local effort to seize Taliban weaponry. Pentagon spokesman Major Mike Halbig said Saturday that the event described by the Afghans, quote, does not fit with any of the information we have, unquote, about Wednesday's raid. He said U.S. Special Forces are trained to make sure that they raid the correct targets. Local corporate huckster sentenced to 14 years. Omega Trust and Trading founder Clyde Hood was sentenced to 14 years by Judge Michael McCuskey. Quote, even after a year and a half, all the pieces of the Omega puzzle haven't been explained. We don't even have enough pieces of the puzzle to really know what Omega was really all about, unquote, said Judge McCuskey. Over $30 million of the investment funds were apparently bilked over the course of Omega's existence, all with fantastic dividends supposed to be paid out to investors. Many of the investors were told that the company's focus was on good, quote, good work, unquote, which never materialized. Some of Hood's chief accomplices even fell for it. Michael Kodosky, who helped Hood develop the multi-marketing system to persuade people to put their money and their homes in Omega's promises of wealth, died believing in the program. His daughter, Karen Tilquist Bibas, said recently at her own sentencing hearing, Kodosky's millions of Omega investors Kurduski, who died on August 28, 2001, exactly 1 year after the indictments were announced, had records showing that he collected nearly $20 million from Omega investors and sent most of it to Hood. Other Omega defendants, particularly Billy Wilson, James Turner, and Arlene Diamond, also claimed they believed Hood's, the News Gazette reported. Champaign County water supply tainted with arsenic. Champaign's aquifer, located in Mahomet, has been found to contain arsenic. Public officials are concerned that long-term exposure to small amounts will hurt residents. Cities with water treatment plants have safeguarded themselves from this danger. Most people are exposed to it. The people most exposed to it are rural residents who depend on well water. Steve Wilson of State Survey said his organization is particularly concerned about arsenic in rural areas. Tazewell County has reported higher levels of arsenic that are deemed safe, especially around Pekin, where up to one-third of all wells have shown elevated levels of it. In no cases, Wilson said, have scientists detected arsenic in local wells that have an imminent danger of poisoning people. Animal rights activists claim police harassment on torch route. Animal rights activists claim that the Olympic officials have collaborated with police across the nation to monitor and interfere with their right to protest the Olympic rodeo. Utah Animal Rights Commission, Coalition, and Showing Animals Respect and Kindness claim to have a video footage of Coca-Cola private security forces and police forces harassing them over rodeo protests. The protests were following the torch rally procession in a truck that projects rodeo scenes onto a big screen. Quote, what we have here are consistent incidences. It's a pattern, unquote, said attorney Ryan Barnard of the taped encounters with police and Salt Lake Olympic Committee vehicles that protesters say repeatedly try to block them from following the procession. Earlier this week, an animal rights activist was arrested at International Olympic Committee headquarters in Lucerne, Switzerland. Colleen Gardner of the Utah Animal Rights Coalition vowed the protest truck will continue to dog the relay as the torch passes through Utah to Salt Lake City. Besides large-scale protests planned during the games, the groups have purchased a Don't Shame the Games billboard in Salt Lake City. Now it's time for our feature story.
But I think the best analogy is that of a battered woman to an abusive partner.
We can maintain this incredible amount of suffering without a whole lot of protest from our own people.
What we've seen in the case, of course, of Iraq is that sanctions have gone terribly wrong. They've become a form of warfare.
While essentially their children are dying.
This points out the hypocrisy of the whole thing.
The sanctions against Iraq are so tight.
All the experts agree there is absolutely no credible evidence that Iraq had anything to do with 9/11.
On August 2nd, 1990, the country of Iraq invades the tiny sheikdom of Kuwait. The United Nations, led by the United States, comes to the aid of a defenseless Kuwait, and thus the Persian Gulf War has started. Iraq is quickly subdued with little loss of life, and the Gulf War is over early the next year, almost as soon as it began. Sound familiar? Well, it's not true. The Gulf War continues to this very day. The steady bombardment of Iraq and the new form of warfare, sanctions, which have done as much to destroy the country as any bomb has. And the death toll is tremendous. The World Health Organization estimates that more children die each month as a result of the sanctions than all those killed on September 11th as a result of the terrorist attacks. Dennis Halliday is the former coordinator for the UN humanitarian activities in Iraq. He resigned from the UN in protest over the sanctions for reasons given now.
People around the world felt that sanctions were a much better deal, so to speak, than war. And those sanctions, as you remember, were zapped in, I think it was 2 or 3 days. If you read Phyllis's book on the United Nations, she has the whole thing set out there. Didn't take long for the Security Council to move. And maybe that was okay. Sanctions looked pretty benign at that particular moment. And sanctions are, as you know, a legitimate tool of the United Nations. They're covered under Chapter 7, Article 41 of the Charter. They are there to impose upon member states who step out of line, shall we say, impose until they come back into line. What we've seen in the case, of course, of Iraq is that sanctions have gone terribly wrong. They've become a form of warfare. Now the fact is, as I said, the invasion was illegal. It was a breach of international law. It was like many other invasions, whether it's Vietnam, Central America, Somalia, Panama, Afghanistan. Civilians, of course, were killed. But the theory of sanctions is a very twisted theory. It very deliberately takes on the Geneva Conventions and Protocols. The theory of a sanction is that you put sufficient pressure on a population, whether it's cultural, social, but in the case of Iraq, of course, it's much more than that. It's the pressure of malnutrition and child mortality rates. So sanctions, UN sanctions, require that you punish a people to the point where they die. You kill the people so that hopefully those who are left will rise up and overthrow the government in power that has offended the United Nations members as set out in the Security Council. Well, I think I've described something that you hopefully will agree with me is unacceptable. This is not what it's all about. Targeting civilians is in breach, as I said, of the Geneva Conventions. To target the innocent, and particularly the vulnerable, the most vulnerable, children, is clearly unacceptable and incompatible with the Charter and the Declaration of Human Rights. I remember trade union leaders coming to see me in Iraq some years ago saying, I wonder, Mr. Halliday, could you talk to the Secretary General, Mr. Kofi Annan, and ask him to arrange that Iraq, that we, be bombed. Because you're killing us slowly every day with the sanctions. It would be much kinder if you could actually kill us quickly. Now, maybe that was rhetoric, but I think you get the drift.
Rick McCutcheon, a longtime activist on the Iraq issue, talks a little bit more about how the sanctions work.
There is something called a UN escrow account, and what has happened is that Iraqi resources are being placed in that UN escrow account. Iraq has to come up with lists of things it wants to do, things it needs to purchase, and so on. They hand it to the UN Security Council. The UN Security Council goes through that list of requests and decides what items on that will be allowed to be purchased. And then those are purchased and sent to Iraq. And, of course, we know that there are a huge number of these contracts, as they're called, that are on hold. Well, this is sanctions. This is the actual reality of what sanctions are. What they're trying to do with smart sanctions, and it's interesting because I just had a very intense conference where David Courtright and I were the keynote speakers. And Courtright is one of the authors of the idea of smart sanctions. And recently in The Nation, you may have seen an exchange between him and a number of other people. Smart sanctions are an attempt to make sanctions more targeted, is their language, to identify specifically items that they want to get off of a list which is prohibited, for example. And it's an effort to try and open up the door, I guess, to have more goods enter into the country of a humanitarian nature. Many analysts really question whether or not this is much of an improvement. And for the most part, these have been rejected. At this point, I believe it was Russia in the last round said that they weren't interested in going forward with this. It's a very complex scenario, and no one person, I think, can really piece all of the different political machineries together. But the end result of it is that smart sanctions are dumb sanctions, which makes you wonder right from the start whether sanctions themselves, I mean, are they dumb, are they smart, what are they? They aren't the answer anymore. We have seen at least 350,000 children that we know have died as a direct result of this. The most recent reports, I think, are very clear about that. The numbers almost become immaterial. We can say that if you add to that other vulnerable groups, the numbers escalate enormously over the years. And sanctions are now simply irredeemable. We cannot go down that route. We have to get rid of the UN escrow account, which is the mechanism by which the Iraqi money is held. We have to get rid of the overflights and the bombing, which has been happening constantly. We have to begin this process that you've already raised of helping to humanize and to create a reconciliation. I really believe that, a reconciliation with the men, women, and children of Iraq. And we need to do that people to people. And that's going to be a long process, a difficult process, but until we do that, we can't really say this is done.
Somebody mentioned that, well, just for instance, that blood bags cannot be imported into Iraq because of the sanctions, because of the possibility that something in the blood bags might be used as a chemical weapon, but yet at the same time, conventional weapons such as, you know, automatic rifles and things like that are allowed into Iraq.
This points out the hypocrisy of the whole thing. If we were really concerned about this, we would be much more consistent with what it is that we're doing. I remember at the time we had a project a number of years ago getting ambulance parts in. Well, I hadn't thought about it at the time. This was a request from hospital officials, and they had no ambulances for a huge radius in a large city. So we said we would help them repair an ambulance because these had all been destroyed through either the initial bombing or through no maintenance whatsoever because they don't have resources to do the work that needs to be done. We thought, well, this is a great project. Well, it took us about 4 years to get one ambulance up and running back then because so many of the parts, according to them, could be dual purpose. So, you know, when you're repairing an engine, you need a carburetor. Well, the answer that comes back is the carburetor can be used for a tank engine. And so the whole question of blood bags is just another example of how you can manipulate things to the point that it reaches a ludicrous. And yet, here we are supplying them with small arms. Well, this to me is saying that the issue isn't about arming the government. It isn't about weapons inspections, in fact. It's really not. It's about maintaining the control of a country's resources. And that's what the UN escrow account is designed to do.
Now the United States is testing the waters of the international community to see how well the escalation of the war on terrorism to Iraq would go over. Middle East analyst Phyllis Bennis talks on that subject here.
So we have new justifications that have emerged for why we should go after Iraq. It's not because it's a repressive regime. It's not because of violations of the UN resolution. It's not any of the old justifications. The new justifications are Iraq is a terrorist state. Now, the big problem they have, of course, is Number one, all the experts agree there is absolutely no credible evidence that Iraq had anything to do with 9/11. In fact, the head of Israeli intelligence also said that, and he even said at one point, we really tried to find a link, and we couldn't find it. And you've got to figure, if they couldn't find it, chances are it doesn't exist. I mean, who can tell? I'm not a fly on the wall in those meetings, so I don't know. But chances are pretty good that if they haven't come up with something now to at least claim is a link, there ain't no link. So what do? They don't say, oh, well, Iraq is not involved in terrorism. They say, well, we're going to change the definition of terrorism. How convenient. So what's the new definition of terrorism and why Iraq should be the next target in the context of an anti-terror war? It's because Iraq could have in the future weapons of mass destruction, because we know they wanted them in the past and they probably will still want them in the future. And they're the kind of government that if they had them, they would probably give them to some terrorists. And so that would make them a threat to the United States. So they're a legitimate target in the war against terrorism. Sounds right, yeah? Now, the problem that you face here is the problem that we face here. And that is that the success of 11 years of demonization of Iraq, not demonization of Saddam Hussein, not demonization of the Iraqi regime, but demonization of Iraq and Iraqis, is so profound in this country that the vast majority of Americans are still willing to accept the legitimacy of attacking Iraq solely on the basis of sometime in the future they might have weapons that we don't like and might give them to somebody who doesn't like us. That's the challenge that AFSC and the rest of the anti-sanctions movement faces. This is a very sobering reality, because while we've seen significant gains from our work, the fact that Colin Powell had to come up with a smart sanctions proposal in the first place is a reflection of how public opinion has been changed by dint of all of your work and the work of everybody else around the country who's been working on this issue year in and year out. We haven't succeeded anywhere near what we need to. And the reality is, if today President Bush got on the television and said, we are launching major campaigns against Iraq, an unfortunately huge majority of Americans, I'm afraid, would stand up and cheer.
Peter Lems is the program assistant for Iraq in the American Friends Service Committee Peacebuilding Unit. He talks about how strict the sanctions are and what the American Friends Service Committee has done to help the people of Iraq in spite of the sanctions.
In fact, the sanctions against Iraq are so tight that any type of normal exchange between countries that you would imagine happens so easily between the United States and Mexico, or the United States and Holland, or the United States and Thailand, is not possible with Iraq. You are not allowed to travel into the country without express permission from the United States or your government. You are not allowed to spend money in that country without permission from the Sanctions Committee of the United Nations. You are not allowed to send a package into that country that weighs more than 12 ounces. So any type of effort to break down the isolation of the Iraqis is in fact a violation of the sanctions. And what we've done in the past 3 years is we have sent professional delegations to Iraq, two delegations of doctors and a delegation of teachers. We've reconstructed 10 school buildings in Iraq. We've sent school supplies for the children in those schools. And most recently, we focused our efforts around sending material, in particular a gas chlorinator, to Iraq that is used for purifying drinking water.
The water chlorinators he mentioned are used in two different hospitals that are used to treat patients with AIDS and tuberculosis. But most people do not have access to clean water. I spoke with Tom Jackson from Voices in the Wilderness about that fact. I saw in the video that how people would gather their water from these ruts in the street, basically, that were dirty and filled with trash, and there's very few ways for them to make sure that it's safe. Boiling it is about as best as a lot of them can do. Right. And people live drinking this water, and some people even die drinking this water. Did any of the people who went there drink the water from the street?
No, that's... Thank you. That's the classic example of what we totally take for granted here and what no one can or should take for granted in Iraq. Of course, the water treatment plants were destroyed during the Gulf War, and because of, again, the 661 committee and essentially U.S. votes on that 661 committee holding up contracts, they can't get what they need to treat water. They can't rebuild the water treatment plants. They can't get, you know, water treatment products in general, including chlorine. So they, as you said, they tend to boil their water if they have to use water from the streets. Some people who have a little bit of money might be able to get RO water, which stands for reverse osmosis, which is a little bit better than the street water, but not really a whole lot. And the delegates from the United States didn't drink any of that. That was the one deviation that we made from their way of living, which is we purchased bottled water, which is in extremely short supply, but we were able to get enough to get by on. But I figured it out in my head one time. What I drank in a matter of 2 days was equal to the average 1 month salary of most people in Iraq. So you can imagine over, you're talking for 1 month of water supply, that's 15 months of their salary. So it's impossible for them to really afford to have genuinely safe water.
Tom spent 8 weeks in Iraq in 2000 and made a movie about his experiences called Greetings from Missile Street. You can find out more about that film at www.joepublicfilms.com. The water supply in shambles, crippling sanctions, little money for infrastructure, and the threat of an escalating war. Where do all the sick and wounded people go? Kathy Kelly, who will be coming to Champaign on February 12th to the Illinois Disciples Foundation, also from Voices in the Wilderness, tells us what sick people in Iraq have to look forward to.
Well, Evelyn's go, this hospital was better than many that I've seen. In this hospital, they had a cardiac care unit, and I've never seen anything like that in an Iraqi hospital before. But they had only 2 functioning monitors and 20 patients, and so they had to do a kind of bizarre musical chairs deciding which 2 patients would get the monitors. And if an emergency case came in, then they'd have to take the monitor away from one patient that was so blessed with the monitor and hook it up to the new emergency patient. And they had a kidney dialysis unit, but no filters. And they had an electrocardiogram machine, but no paper. And then I talked to the resident on the cardiac care unit, and I began to understand that actually he's done all of his training through oral tradition. He's never been able to work on a fully equipped unit. He's only been able to hear from doctors who can remember when they once worked on such units. And now he's passing this lore, if you will, onto the next generation of doctors. And then Dr. Tawalha, the older doctor, sat down with us after taking us through the hospital and going through the litany we've heard of so many times, not available, not available, not available, of all the things they don't have. And I thought, well, we really used up this morning, but he wanted us to stay. He really had more that he wanted to say. And then it came out that they blame themselves when they lose the patients, but that he regards himself as an out-of-date doctor, that he's been so cut off from modern medicine and modern practice that he really doesn't even count. His self-esteem is pretty low when it comes to doctoring right now. He said they feel like they're soldiers at the front without weapons because they're trying to deal with problems that they can't solve. And then he went on to talk about how they don't really feel like rebuilding because they know they're going to get hit again. And it's hard to keep up the energy to maintain the hospital.
You have been listening to IMC Radio News. Come check us out, or better yet, come join us at 218 West Race Street or West Main Street in Urbana, or www.ucimc.org. My name is Avram Goldentrist, and signing off for IMC Radio News.